Far beyond the mountains was the Circle Sea and Ankh-Morpork, and this holy wood place. Far away places with strange-sounding names. A wind blew across the veldt, carrying faint whispers even here. Azurael raised his staff.
"It's 1,500 miles to Ankh-Morpork," he said. "We've got 363 elephants, 50 carts of forage, the monsoon's about to break, and we're wearing sort of things like glass, only dark glass things on our eyes."
His voice trailed off, his brow furrowed, as if he'd just been listening to his own voice and hadn't understood it. The air seemed to glitter. He saw M'Bou staring at him. He shrugged.
"Let's go," he said.
M'Bou cupped his hands. He spent all night working out the order of the march.
"Blue section belong Uncle Ngru. Forward," he shouted. "Yellow section belong Auntie Gugul. Forward. Green section belong second cousin Kik. Forward."
An hour later, the veldt in front of the low hill was deserted except for a billion flies and one dung beetle who couldn't believe his luck. Something went plop on the red dust, throwing up a little crater. And again. And again. Lightning split the trunk of a nearby baobab. The rains began. Victor's back was beginning to ache. Carrying young women to safety looked a good idea on paper, but had major drawbacks after the first 100 yards.
"Have you any idea where she lives?" he said. "And is it somewhere close?"
"No idea," said Gaspode.
"She once said something about it being over a clothes shop," said Victor.
"That'll be in the alley alongside Borgles, then," said Gaspode.
Gaspode and Laddie led the way through the alleys and up a rickety outside staircase. Maybe they smelled out Ginger's room. Victor wasn't going to argue with mysterious animal senses. Victor went up the back stairs as quietly as possible. He was dimly aware that where people stayed was often infested by the common or greatly suspicious landlady, and he felt that he had enough problems as it was. He used Ginger's feet to push open the door. It was a small room, low-ceilinged and furnished with the sad, washed-out furniture found in rented rooms across the multiverse. At least, that's how it had started out. What it was furnished with now was Ginger. She had saved every poster, even those from early clicks, when she was just in very small print as a girl. They were thumb-tacked to the walls. Ginger's face and his own stared at him from every angle. There was a large mirror at one end of the pokey room, and a couple of half-burned candles in front of him. Victor deposited the girl carefully on the narrow bed, and then stared around him very carefully. His 6th, 7th, and 8th senses were screaming at him. He was in a place of magic.
"It's like a sort of temple," he said. "A temple to herself."
"It gives me the willies," said Gaspode.
Victor stared. Maybe he'd always successfully avoided being awarded the pointy hat and the big staff. But he had acquired wizard instincts. He had a sudden vision of a city under the sea, with octopuses curling stealthily through the drowned doorways and lobsters watching the streets.
"Fates don't like it when people take up more space than they ought to. Everyone knows that."
"I'm going to be the most famous person in the whole world," thought Victor. "That's what she said."
He shook his head.
"No," he said aloud. "She just likes the posters. It's just ordinary vanity."
It didn't sound believable, even to him. The room fairly hummed with... With what? He hadn't felt anything like it before. Power of some sort, certainly. Something that was brushing tantalizingly against his senses. Not exactly magic, at least not the kind he was used to, but something that seemed similar while not being the same. Like sugar compared with salt. The same shape and the same color, but... Ambition wasn't magical. Powerful, yes, but not magical, surely. Magic wasn't difficult. That was the big secret that the whole baroque edifice of wizardry had been set up to conceal. Anyone with a bit of intelligence and enough perseverance could do magic, which was why the wizards cloaked it with rituals and the whole pointy hat business. The trick was to do magic and get away with it. Because it was as if the human race was a field of corn and magic helped the users to grow just that bit taller so that they stood out. That attracted the attention of gods and, Victor hesitated, other things outside this world. People who used magic without knowing what they were doing usually came to a sticky end. All over the entire room, sometimes. He pictured Ginger back on the beach, I want to be the most famous person in the whole world. Perhaps that was something new, come to think of it. Not ambition for gold or power or land or all the things that were familiar parts of the human world. Just ambition to be yourself, as big as possible. Not ambition for, but to be. He shook his head. He was just in some room, in some cheap building, in some town that was about as real as well as the thickness of a click. It wasn't the place to have thoughts like this. The important thing was to remember that Holy Wood wasn't a real place at all. He stared at the posters again. You just get one chance, she said. You live for maybe 70 years, and if you're lucky, you get one chance. Think of all the natural skiers who are born in deserts. Think of all the genius blacksmiths who were born hundreds of years before anyone invented the horse. All the skills that are never used. All the wasted chances. How lucky for me, he thought, gloomily, that I happen to be alive at this time. Ginger turned over in her sleep. At least her breathing was more regular now. Come on, said Gaspard. It's not right, you being alone in a lady's boudoir. I'm not alone, Victor said. She's with me. That's the point, said Gaspard. Woof, Laddie added, loyally. You know, said Victor, following the dogs down the stairs, I'm beginning to feel there's something wrong here. There's something going on, and I don't know what it is. Why was she trying to get into the hill?
Probably in league with the dread powers, said Gaspard.
The city and the hill and the old book and everything, said Victor, ignoring this. It all makes sense if only I knew what was connecting it. He stepped out into the early evening, into the lights and noise of Holywood. Tomorrow we'll go up there in daylight and sort this out once and for all, he said.
No, we won't, said Gaspard. The reason being, tomorrow we're going to Ankh-Morpork, remember?
We, said Victor. Ginger and I are going. I didn't know about you.
Laddie going too, said Gaspard.
Good boy, Laddie.
Yeah. I heard the trainer say, so I've got to go with him to see he don't get into any trouble style of thing.
Victor yawned. Well, I'm going to go to bed. We'll probably have to start early. Gaspard looked innocently up and down the alley. Somewhere a door opened, and there was the sound of drunken laughter.
I thought I might have a bit of a stroll before turning in, he said. Sure, laddie.
Laddie, good boy.
The sights and that.
Victor looked doubtful. Don't keep him out too late, he said. People will worry.
Yeah, right, said Gaspard. Good night.
He sat and watched Victor wander off. He said under his dreadful breath. Catch anyone worrying about me. He glared up at Laddie, who sprang to obedient attention.
Right, young fellow, me pup, he said. It's time you got educated. Lesson one, glumming free drinks in bars. Lucky for you, he added, that you met me.
Two canine shapes staggered uncertainly up the midnight street.
We're poor little lambs, Gaspard howled. What have lost our way?
Woof, 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 woof.
We're little lost shapes, what have...
Gaspard sagged down and scratched an ear, or at least where he vaguely thought an ear might be. His leg waved uncertainly in the air. Laddie gave him a sympathetic look. It had been an amazingly successful evening. Gaspard had always got his free drinks by simply sitting and staring intently at people until they got uncomfortable, and poured him some beer in a saucer, in the hope that he would drink it and go away. It was slow and tedious, but as a technique it had served him well. Whereas Laddie did tricks. Laddie could drink out of bottles. Laddie could bark the numbers of fingers people held up. So could Gaspard, of course, but it had never occurred to him that such an activity could be rewarded. Laddie could home in on young women who were being taken out for the evening by a hopeful swain, and lay his head on their lap and give them such a soulful look that the swain would buy him a saucer of beer and a bag of goldfish-shaped biscuits, just in order to impress the prospective loved one. Gaspard had never been able to do that, because he was far too short for laps, and anyway got nothing but disgusted screams if he tried it. He'd sat under the table in perplexed disapproval to begin with, and then in alcoholic perplexed disapproval, because Laddie was generosity itself when it came to sharing saucers of beer. Now, after they'd both been thrown out, Gaspard decided it was time for a lecture in true dogness.
You don't want to go himblong, umblong, humbling yourself to humans, he said. It's letting everyone down. We'll never throw off the shackles of dependency on mankind if dogs like you go around being glad to see people the whole time. I was personally disgusted when you did that lying on your back and playing dead routine, let me tell you.
Oof.
You're just a running dog of the human imperialists, said Gaspode severely. Laddie put his paws over his nose. Gaspode tried to stand up, tripped over his legs and sat down heavily. After a while, a couple of huge tears coursed down his fur. I mean, look at the start I had in life. Thrown in a river in a sack. An actual sack. Dear little puppy dog opens his eyes, looks out in wonder at the world style of thing. He's in this sack. And tears dripped off his nose. For 2 weeks I thought the brick was me mother.
Oof,
said Laddie with uncomprehending sympathy. Just my luck they threw me in the ark, Gaspode went on. Any other river, I'd have drowned and gone to doggy heaven. I heard where this big black ghostly dog who comes up to you when you die and says your time has gone. 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 Gaspode stared at nothing much. Can't sink in the ark, though, he said thoughtfully. Very tough river, the ark.
Oof.
It shouldn't happen to a dog, said Gaspode, metaphorically.
Oof!
Gaspode peered blearily at Laddie's bright, alert and irrevocably stupid face. You don't understand a bloody word I've been saying, do you? He muttered.
Oof!
Said Laddie, begging. Lucky bugger, sighed Gaspode. There was a commotion at the other end of the alley. He heard a voice say, There he is! Laddie, here, boy! The words dripped relief. It's the man, growled Gaspode. You don't have to go.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Good boy, laddie. Laddie, good boy. Oof,
barked Laddie, trotting forward obediently, if a little unsteadily.
We've been looking for you everywhere, muttered one of the trainers, raising a stick.
Don't hit it, said the other trainer. You'll ruin everything. He peered into the alley and met Gaspode's stare coming the other way. That's the flea bag that's been hanging around, he said. It gives me the creeps.
Heave something at it, suggested the other man.
The trainer reached down and picked up a stone. When he stood up again, the alley was empty. Drunk or sober, Gaspode had perfect reflexes in certain circumstances. See, the trainer said, glaring at the shadows, it's like it's some kind of mind reader.
Oh, it's just a mutt, said his companion.
Don't worry about it. Come on, get the leash on this one and let's get him back before Mr. Dibbler finds out. Laddie followed them obediently back to the sanctuary of the fruit bat and allowed himself to be chained up to his kennel. Possibly he didn't like the idea, but it was hard to be sure in the network of duties, obligations, and vague emotional shadows that made up what, for want of a better word, had to be called his mind. He pulled experimentally on the chain once or twice and then lay down awaiting developments. After a while, a small, hoarse voice on the other side of the fence said,
I could send you a bone with a file in it. Only you'd eat it.
Laddie perked up.
Ooh, ooh, good boy, Laddie. Ooh, 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 ooh. Good boy, Gaspode. Ooh.
Shh, shh. At least they ought to let you speak to a lawyer, said Gaspode. Chaining someone up's against human rights.
Ooh.
Anyway, I'd paid him back. I followed the audible one back to his house and piddled all down his front door.
Ooh.
Gaspode sighed and waddled away. Sometimes, in his heart of hearts, he wondered whether it wouldn't after all be nice to belong to someone. Not just be owned by them or chained up by them, but actually belong so that you were glad to see them, and carried their slippers in your mouth and pined away when they died, etc. Laddie actually liked that kind of stuff, if you could call it liked. It was more like something built into his bones. Gaspode wondered darkly if this was true dogness, and growled deep in his throat. It wasn't, if he had anything to do with it. Because true dogness wasn't about slippers and walkies and pining for people, Gaspode was sure. Dogness was about being tough and independent and mean.
Yeah.
Gaspode had heard that all canines could interbreed, even back to the original wolves, so that must mean that deep down inside every dog was a wolf. You could make a dog out of a wolf, but you couldn't take the wolf out of a dog. When the hard pad was acting up, and the fleas were feisty and acting full of plumptiousness, it was a comforting thought. Gaspode wondered how you went about mating with a wolf, and what happened to you when you stopped.
Well, that didn't matter. What mattered was that true dogs didn't go around going mad with pleasure just because a human said something to them. Yeah. He growled at a pile of trash and dared it to disagree. Part of the pile moved, and a feline face with a defunct fish in its mouth peered out at him. He was just about to bark half-heartedly at it for tradition's sake when it spat the fish out and spoke to him.
Hello, Gaspard.
Gaspard relaxed. Oh, well, old cat. No offence meant. Didn't know it was you.
I hateth fish, said the cat, but at least they don't talk back.
Another part of the trash moved and Squeak the Mouse emerged.
What are you two doing down here? Said Gaspard. I thought you said it was safer on the hill.
Not any more, said the cat. It's getting too spooky.
Gaspard frowned. Yet a cat, he said disapprovingly. You ought to be right alongside the idea of spooky.
But that doesn't extend to having golden sparks crackling off your fur and the ground shaking the whole time, and weird voices that you think must be happening in your own head, said the cat. It's becoming eldritch up there.
So we all came down, said Squeak. Mr. Thumpy and the duck are hiding out in the dunes.
Another cat dropped off the fence beside them. It was large and ginger and not blessed with Holywood intelligence. It stared at the sight of a mouse looking relaxed in the presence of a cat. Squeak nudged Cat on the paw.
Get rid of it, he said.
Cat glared at the newcomer.
Sod off, he said. Go on, beat it. Gods, this is so humiliating.
Not just for you, said Gaspard, as the new cat trotted away, shaking its head. If some of the dogs in this town see me chatting to a cat, my street cred is going to go way down.
We were reckoning, said the cat, with the occasional nervous glance towards Squeak, that maybe we ought to give in and see if...
He's trying to say that there might be a place for us in moving pictures, said Squeak. What do you think?
As a double act, said Gaspard. They nodded.
Not a chance, he said. Who's going to pay good money to see cats and mice chasing one another? They're only interested even in dogs if they just pander to humans the old time, so they certainly ain't going to want to watch a cat chase a mouse. Take it from me. I know about moving pictures.
Then it's about time your humans got it sorted out so we can go home, snapped the mouse. The boy isn't doing anything.
He's useless, said the cat.
He's in love, said Gaspard. It's very tricky.
Yes, I know how it is, said the cat sympathetically. People throwing old boots and things at you.
Old boots? Said the mouse.
That's what's always happened to me when I've been in love, said the cat wistfully.
It's different for humans, said Gaspard uncertainly. You don't get so many boots and buckets of water thrown at you. It's more flowers and arguing and stuff.
The animals looked glumly at one another.
I've watched them, said Squeak. She thinks he's an idiot.
That's all part of it, added Gaspard. They call it romance.
Cat shrugged.
Give me a boot every time. You know where you stand with a boot.
The glittering spirit of Hollywood streamed out into the world, no longer a trickle but a flood. It bubbled in the veins of people, even of animals. When the handlemen turned their handles, it was there. When the carpenters hammered their nails, they hammered for Holywood. Holywood was in Borgle's stew, in the sand, in the air. It was growing, and it was going to flower. Cut Me Own Throat Dibbler, or CMOT, as he likes to be called, sat up in bed and stared at the darkness. In his head, a city was on fire. He fumbled hurriedly beside his bed for the matches, managed to light the candle, and eventually located a pen. There was no paper. He specifically told everyone there ought to be some paper by his bed in case he woke up with an idea. That's when you got the best ideas, when you were asleep. At least there was a pen and ink. Images sleeted past his eyes. Catch them now or let them go forever. He snatched up the pen and started to scribble on the bedsheets.
A man and a woman aflame with passion in a city riven by civil war.
The pen scritched and spluttered its way across the coarse linen.
Yes, yes, this was it. He'd show 'em with their silly plaster pyramids and penny and dime palaces. This was the one they'd have to look up to.
When the history of Holywood was written, this was the one they'd point to and say, that was the moving picture to end all moving pictures.
Trolls, battles, romance, people with thin moustaches, soldiers of fortune, and one woman's fight to keep the...
Dibbler hesitated. something or other she loves. We'll think about this later. In a world gone mad. The pen jerked and tore and raced onwards. Brother against brother. Women in crinoline dresses slapping people's faces. A mighty dynasty brought low. A great city aflame, not with passion, he made a note in the margin, but with flame. Possibly even... He bit his lip. Yeah, he'd been waiting for this. Yeah. A 1,000 elephants. Later, Sol Dibbler said, Look, Uncle, the Ankh Morpork Civil War, great idea, no problem with that. Famous historical occurrence, no problem. It's just that none of the historians mentioned seeing any elephants. It was a big war, said Dibbler defensively. You're bound to miss things. Not 1,000 elephants, I think. Who's running this studio? It's just that... Listen, said Dibbler, maybe they didn't have 1,000 elephants, but we're going to have 1,000 elephants, because 1,000 elephants is more real, okay? The sheet gradually filled up with Dibbler's excited scrawl. He reached the bottom and continued over the woodwork of the bed. By the gods, this was the real stuff. No fiddly little battles here. They'd need just about every handleman in Holywood. He sat back, panting with exhilarated exhaustion. He could see it now. It was as good as made. All it needed was a title, something with a ring to it, something that people would remember. Something, he scratched his chin with the pen, that said that the affairs of ordinary people were so much chaff in the great storms of history. Storms, that was it. Good imagery, a storm. You got thunder, lightning, rain, wind. Wind, that was it. He crawled up to the top of the sheet and with great care wrote, Blown away. Victor tossed and turned in his narrow bed, trying to get to sleep. Images marched through his half-dozing mind. There were chariot races and pirate ships and things he couldn't identify, and in the middle of it all, this thing climbing a tower, something huge and terrible, grinning defiance at the world, and someone screaming. He sat up, drenched in sweat. After a few minutes, he swung his legs out of bed and went to the window. Above the lights of the town, Holywood Hill brooded in the first dim light of dawn. It was going to be another fine day. Holywood dreams surged through the streets in great invisible golden waves. And something came with it. Something that never, never dreamed at all. Something that never went to sleep. Ginger got out of bed and also looked towards the hill, although it is still doubtful if she saw it. Moving like a sightless person in a familiar room, she padded across to the door, down the steps and out into the tail of the night. A small dog, a cat and a mouse watched from the shadows as she moved silently down the alley and headed for the hill.
"Did you see her eyes?" said Gaspode. "Glowing," said the cat. "Yuck."
"She's going to the hill," said Gaspode. "I don't like that."
"So what?" said Squeak. "She's always round the hill somewhere, goes up there every night, and moons around looking dramatic."
"What?"
"Every night. We thought it was all this romance stuff."
"But you can see by the way she's moving that something's not right," said Gaspode desperately. "That's not walking, that's lurching, like she's being pulled along by an inner voice style of thing."
"Don't look like that to me," said Squeak. "Walking on two legs is lurching, in my book."
"You've only got to look at her face to see there's something wrong."
"Of course there's something wrong. She's a human," said Squeak.
Gaspode considered the options. There weren't many. The obvious one was to find Victor and get him to come back here. He rejected it. It sounded too much like the silly, bouncy sort of thing that Laddie would do. It suggested that the best a dog could think of when confronted with a puzzle was to find a human to solve it. He trotted forward and gripped the trailing hem of the sleepwalker's nightdress firmly in his jaws. She walked on, pulling him off his feet. The cat laughed, far too sarcastically for Gaspode's liking.
"Time to wake up, miss," he growled, letting the nightdress go. Ginger strode onwards.
"See," said the cat, "give them an opposed thumb and they think they're something special."
"I'm going to follow her," said Gaspode. "A girl could come to harm out there by herself at night."
"That's dogs for you," said the cat to Squeak. "Always fawning on people. It'll be Diamante collars and a bowl with his name on it next, I'm telling you."
"If you're looking to lose a mouthful of fur, you've come to the right place, kitty," snarled Gaspode, baring his rotten teeth again.
I don't have to tolerate that sort of thing, said the cat, lifting its nose haughtily. Come, Squeak, let us hie to a garbage heap where there ain't so much rubbish.
Gaspard scowled at their departing backs.
Pussy, he yelled after them.
Then he trotted after Ginger, hating himself. If I was a wolf, which technically I am, he thought, there'd definitely be a rending of jaws and similar. Any girl wandering around by herself would be in dead trouble. I could attack any time I liked. I'm just choosing not to. One thing I'm not doing, I'm not sort of keeping an eye on her. I know Victor told me to keep an eye on her, but catch me going round doing what humans tell me. I'd like to see humans that could give me orders. Tear his throat out, just like that. And if anything happened to her, he'd go round mooning for days and probably forget to feed me. Not that dogs like me needs humans to feed them. I could be out bringing down reindeers just by leaping on their backs and biting the jugulars off. But it's damn convenient getting it all on a plate. She was moving quite fast. Gaspard's tongue hung out as he strove to keep up. His head was aching. He risked a few sideways squints to see if any other dogs were watching. If they were, he thought, he could pretend he was chasing her.
Which was what he was doing anyway. Yeah.
The trouble was, he never had much breath at the best of times, and it was getting hard to keep pace. She ought to have the decency to slow down a bit. Ginger began to climb the lower slopes of the hill. Gaspard considered barking loudly, and then if anyone drew attention to this afterwards, he could always say it was to frighten her. Trouble was, he had about enough wind left for a threatening wheeze. Ginger topped a rise and went down into the little dell among the trees. Gaspard staggered after her, righted himself, opened his mouth to whimper a warning, and almost swallowed his tongue. The door had opened several inches. More sand rolled down the heap even as Gaspard watched. And he could hear voices. They didn't seem to be speaking words, but the bones of words, meaning without disguise. They hummed around his bullet head like mendicant mosquitoes, begging and cajoling, and...
He was the most famous dog in the world. The knots unraveled from his coats, the frayed patches sprouted glossy curls, his fur grew on his suddenly supple frame, and withdrew from his teeth. Plates appeared in front of him, not laden with the multicoloured and mysterious organs that he was normally expected to eat, but with dark, red steak. There was sweet water, no, there was beer in a bowl with his name on it. Tantalizing odors on the air suggested that a number of lady dogs would be happy to make his acquaintance after he had drunk and dined. Thousands of people thought he was marvelous. He had a collar with his name on it, and...
No, that couldn't be right. Not a collar. It'd be a squeaky toy next if you didn't draw the line at collars. The image collapsed in confusion, and now the pack bounded through the dark, snow-covered trees, falling in behind him, red mouths agape, long legs eating up the road. The fleeing humans on the sledge didn't have a chance. One was thrown aside when a runner bounced off a branch and lay screaming in the road, as Gaspard and the wolves fell upon... No, that wasn't right, he thought wretchedly. You didn't actually eat humans. They got up your nose all right. The gods knew, but you couldn't actually eat them. A confusion of instincts threatened to short-circuit his schizophrenically doggy mind. The voices gave up their assault in disgust and turned their attention to Ginger, who was methodically trying to shift more sand. One of Gaspard's fleas bit him sharply. It was probably dreaming of being the biggest flea in the world. His leg came up automatically to scratch it, and the spell faded. He blinked.
Bloody hell,
he whined. This is what's happening to the humans. Wonder what they're making of her dream. The hairs rose along Gaspard's back. You didn't need any special mysterious animal instincts here. Perfectly generalized everyday instincts were enough to horrify him. There was something dreadful on the other side of the door. She was trying to let it out. He had to wake her up. Biting wasn't really a good idea. His teeth weren't that good these days. He doubted very much if barking would be any better. That left one alternative. The sand moved eerily under his paws. Maybe it was dreaming of being rocks. The scrawny trees around the hollow were wrapped in sequoia fantasies. Even the air that curled around Gaspard's bullet head moved sluggishly, although it's anyone's guess what the air dreams about. Gaspard trotted up to Ginger
and pushed his nose against her leg. The universe contains any amount of horrible ways to be woken up, such as the noise of the mob breaking down the front door, the scream of fire engines, or the realization that today is the Monday which on Friday night was a comfortably long way off. A dog's wet nose is not, strictly speaking, the worst of the bunch, but it has its own peculiar dreadfulness which connoisseurs of the ghastly and dog owners everywhere have come to know and dread. It's like having a small piece of defrosting liver pressed lovingly against you. Ginger blinked. The glow faded from her eyes. She looked down, her expression of horror turning to astonishment, and then, when she saw Gaspard leering up at her, back to a more mundane horror.
"Hello,"
Gaspard said ingratiatingly. She backed away, bringing her hands up protectively. Sand dribbled between her fingers. Her eyes flickered towards it in bewilderment and then back to Gaspard.
"Gods, that's horrible," she said. "What's going on? Why am I here?"
Her hands flew to her mouth. "Oh, no," she whispered. "Not again." She stared at him for a moment, glared up at the doorway, then turned, hitched up her nightdress and hurried back to town through the morning mists. Gaspard struggled after her, aware of anger in the air, desperately trying to put as much space as possible between the door and himself.
"Something dreadful in there," he thought. "Probably tentacle things that rips your face off. I mean, when you find mysterious doors in old hills, stands to reason what comes out ain't going to be pleased to see you. Evil creatures what man shouldn't wot of. And here's one dog what don't want to wot of him either. Why couldn't she..."
He grumbled on towards the town. Behind him, the door moved the tiniest fraction of an inch.